Good morning, everyone. Thank you for attending the presentation. It's a great pleasure to present today, especially after the coffee break. So the title of my presentation is Association of Phenotypic Traits with Ploidy and Genome Size in Annual Ryegrass. So because some of you might not be familiar with some of the terminology that I will be covering today, I would like to start my presentation by giving some basic concepts. So what are polyploids? Polyploids are organisms that have multiple copies of the same chromosome set. So in annual ryegrass, they have the basic chromosome number is 7, meaning that there are 7 unique chromosomes in the cells. So in a diploid species, there are 14 chromosomes because each one of the 7 unique chromosomes are represented twice. The same for a tetraploid, there are 28 chromosomes because each one of the 7 unique chromosomes are 4 times in the cells. But why is important the polyploidy, and especially in forages? And this table represents some of the most common forages in the U.S. And you can see that most of them are polyploids, and even within the same species, you get different ploidy levels in the forage. Also, polyploidy is important for the mode of reproduction, because for example, in bahia grass, diploid bahia grass reproduces sexually, and polyploid bahia grass reproduces by apomixis. Now, how many of you have heard about the Jaegas effect before? Nobody. One person, Dr. Q, okay. So basically, this idea was developed by Stebbins in the 50s, and is that usually polyploids tend to be bigger than diploids. For example, here we can see that in potato, the tetraploid cultivated potato have not only bigger leaves, but also at the whole plant level is bigger. The same for alfalfa, not only in flowers, but also in the leaf size. This is not only true in forages, also in other species. And in fact, if you are having oysters today and you get the big ones, they are triploids. So you will be eating triploids species. This effect is also very common in seed sites, and that's why we use different seeding rates for polyploids or diploid species. But what is causing this? Basically, if you get this diploid cell, and you increase the chromosome number, you get bigger nuclei, and the entire cell will be bigger. So that's basically the effect that we are seeing. So the outline of my presentation is I will be covering these 5 main points. I will be talking about the importance of annual ryegrass in the U.S., and I will be discussing about the breeding methodology used in the breeding program at the University of Florida. I will also talk about the germplasm sources that we can use to breed for annual ryegrass, and I will talk about a study that I did to determine the ploidy level and the morphological characterization of the USDA collection. So ryegrass is a cool season grass, and you can find it in many countries in temperate areas, as well as in some subtropical areas. In the U.S., it is basically found in most of the states. However, there are 3 main areas where ryegrass is particularly important. The first one is the southeastern U.S., where annual ryegrass is planted in more than 1 million hectares annually because of its high nutritive value and is used for grazing or hay. Also, annual ryegrass can be used for turf application in this region. Secondly, annual ryegrass is planted in the Pacific Northwest and especially in Oregon for seed production in more than 50,000 hectares annually, totaling a value of $40 million in farm gate value. Now, currently, there is an increased interest in using annual ryegrass in the Midwest as a cover crop to reduce or prevent soil erosion. The University of Florida started in the 80s with Dr. Gordon Prine, and they focused mainly on disease resistance, maturity, and cold tolerance. The breeding methodology that they use is recurrent phenotypic selection, so they basically created a population and they select for the best phenotypes in that population in order to develop a cultivar. With this methodology, it takes between 8 to 10 years to develop a single cultivar. The program has been successful because they developed more than 40 cultivars so far. However, I believe that we can use molecular technologies in order to reduce the number of years to develop a cultivar. And that is basically my proposal for my PhD. However, in order to develop a genomic selection program, I need to start with a very wide genetic population. So I need to look for germplasm sources. The main source is the USDA collection, that you can request through the Germplasm Resource Information Network. So you basically type here the species that you are interested in, and you get all the accessions. For ryegrass, the USDA sent me 139 plant introductions, and you can see here that the first one was made in 1948, and the last one in 1998. What is the problem here? Is that only 14 are known with diploidy level. So what I'm saying is this is the most important genetic resource for annual ryegrass in the US. However, we don't have the information for ploidy level. And this is important for us, and especially for ryegrass, because if you cross a tetraploid with a diploid species, you get a triploid that is sterile. And we reproduce ryegrass with seeds. Other germplasm sources are, I'm using 15 experimental lines from our breeding program and 13 commercial cultivars. So moving to my study, I had two objectives. One was to determine the ploidy level and the genome size in the 167 accessions using flow cytometry. And the second one was to evaluate the morphological and agronomic variables for the population. I use flow cytometry because this is a very straightforward technique. We basically grew the plants in a greenhouse and at least five plants per plant introduction. We chopped the leaves with a razor blade using an extraction buffer that basically extracts the nuclei from the cell. And then we stain the DNA using propidium iodide, that is a compound that binds to the DNA, and you can measure the DNA content of the cell. For the morphological characterization, we use a randomized complete block designs with six blocks, and each plot was represented by 10 space plants. Here I want to say that all the quantitative variables, such as plant height or yield or number of tillers, were counted or were used using three plants per plot, and the disease ratings was basically an average of the plot. We measured 15 morphological and agronomic variables for the study. So moving to the results, this is basically the output that you get from the flow cytometer. It's a histogram where in the x-axis you get the fluorescent intensity of the propidium iodide. So the DNA is basically an indirect measurement here. And in the y-axis is the count of the number of cells with a given ploidy level. Here you're seeing two peaks for sorghum. And we use sorghum because we know sorghum is a diploid and we know the genome size of sorghum. And these two peaks represent basically different stages of the cell cycle. The G1 represents the cycle before DNA replication, so each chromosome has only one chromatid. However, the G2 is after DNA replication, so each chromosome is represented by two sister chromatids. But how do we determine the ploidy level or the genome size for annual ryegrass? It's basically by comparing the position of the peaks for ryegrass with sorghum. So we use this formula to calculate the genome size by basically comparing the position here for a diploid, for the G1 comparing to the G1 in sorghum, and the right for the tetraploid plant comparing the relative position of the peaks for ryegrass. With this methodology, we found 140 diploid and 27 tetraploid species or lines in our population. This graph represents the source or the origin of those plant introductions in the USDA, and you can see that most of them are coming from Europe because that's the center of origin for the species. Also, I want to introduce again this graph that I showed you previously, but now looking at the difference between diploid and tetraploid. And the reason why there are more diploids is because this is naturally diploid. However, the tetraploids were created by doubling the chromosome number of the diploids. Then we look in this graph at the genome size only from the diploid accessions at different backgrounds. Because in the population we have wild types, cultivated plants or cultivars, unknown sources, experimental lines, and also cultivated plants. We observe that the wild types tend to have a larger genome size. So our next question is, does bigger genome size in the wild types relate to higher genetic diversity? And that is a study that I will be conducting next year in the Nobel Foundation. Now, moving to the morphological characterization, I will show you only some of the results. Here we are comparing the diploids in black and the tetraploids in gray for eight variables. In general, we saw that the tetraploids were bigger or larger compared to the diploids, except for heading date. meaning that there are early or late maturing cultivars at both ploidy levels. So we found that the stomate size or the guard cell length size was a very useful variable to measure for two reasons. One is a very straightforward technique, and two, it costs us $5 to measure, because the technique that actually an undergraduate student used was he painted the leaf with a nail polish, he peeled it off, and he put it in a microscope and took a picture and then analyzed the size. So for us, this is a very cheap and rapid screening methodology when we want to identify diploids and tetraploid ryegrass. And I would like to make a point here that, especially for the grad students, that working with undergrads and mentoring them is a very rewarding experience. We published a paper, and I made my advisor happy, so this is very good. So as a summary, what have been done? We identified very relevant genetic diversity in the USDA collection. For example, here you can see that this plant introduction on the top is already for seed harvest. However, the other one is still growing vegetatively. We determined the ploidy level of the USDA collection, and we are going to be sending this information for them to update in the website. We found that tetraploids may have an advantage over diploid for yield and for other variables, and we found that the stomate size is a very good indicator of ploidy level in ryegrass. What is coming next? I'm evaluating or analyzing the data to determine the genetic parameters such as heritability and the correlation among the traits. I'm also going to perform a genetic diversity study with the goal of creating a core collection for annual ryegrass. I'm also working on developing a reference population in order to build a genomic selection program for annual ryegrass. Finally, I'm working on chromosome doubling, and the reason for this is I really want to see the effect of the same population at the diploid and tetraploid level to see if it is really an effect of increasing the genome size in annual ryegrass. With that, I would like to thank you for your attention, and I would take any questions. Yes.
I was curious, with the green accession, did any of your cytometry screening not agree with what they were described to where they were located, their collections?
So the question is if some of the green accession that they had information on ploidy that it didn't agree, and the answer is no. All of the accession that they had were diploid. There was only one tetraploid that they were reported, and that was the first tetraploid plant that was introduced from Germany. So they had basically that information. Yes?
So would hexaploid be possible?
The question is if hexaploids would be possible. And I will show you the last picture again. This is basically the cultivar Nelson. That is naturally a tetraploid, and I'm converting it to octoploid. So my idea is to basically then cross and with a tetraploid and develop an hexaploid plant. But we will have those results later. Yes?
Do you have any thoughts, do any correlations with ploidy level to biotic or abiotic stresses?
The question is if we have any or are trying to perform a correlation between biotic or abiotic stresses with ploidy. And we measure some of the diseases. The most common is crown rust. We didn't find any correlation, meaning that there are diploids and tetraploids that are resistant to diseases.
Let's go ahead and thank Esteban for his presentation.
Thank you.